The Starter Marriage, written by Kate Harrison and read by Jilly Bond.
Starter Marriage, noun. A first marriage that lasts only a short time, does not produce children, and ends in a clean divorce. See also Starter Home. Chapter 1. When Barney came into the kitchen on Boxing Day and told me he was leaving me for his secretary, I didn't cry. I didn't cling on to his ankles, begging him to stay. I didn't attack him with a Le Creuset pan I was drying at the time. The thought did occur to me, but it was part of a set of 5 my parents bought us as a wedding present, and a gap in the display rack would have added insult to injury. All I said was, "Let's try to make sure things don't get messy." He laughed, a dry coughing sound that made me wince.
"No, of course not. There'd be nothing worse for Tip Top Tess than to make a mess, would there?"
And he left the room, and the house, and our marriage. I finished drying the pan and hung it up before I burst into tears. Tip Top Tess. It's not a sexy nickname, but it is accurate. And if wanting things to be neat and tidy is my only fault, I don't think I'm doing too badly. I give to charity, I'm kind to animals and small children, and I remember all my friends' birthdays. Since when has tidiness been a crime? So, when I spent the first New Year's Eve of my life alone, my resolution was to avoid nastiness, to stay as civilised and proper as I would in any other situation, to keep things shipshape, ready for when Barney came back. And, as far as my nearests and dearests are concerned, I've been pulling it off. Somehow I've managed to maintain the status quo, or at least the illusion of the status quo, for 5 months. Only I know how far I've slipped. Until tonight. The doorbell rings, and it all falls apart. I tiptoe into the hall and peer through the spy hole. Mel's face looms up at me, distorted by the fisheye lens, so she looks all eyes and nose. Exactly the features I don't want scrutinising my current living arrangements. I wonder if she's seen me through the glass panel. I'm trapped now, unable to escape upstairs in case she catches a glimpse of movement and realises I'm here. Maybe if I crouch down behind the door and wait, there's a chance she might leave. No harm done. The reproduction Edwardian bell rings again, and I feel the reverberation through the wooden frame. Of all my friends, Mel is the least likely to give up easily. After 15 years as a reporter, she's used to hanging about on doorsteps, playing cat and mouse with the criminals or adulterers inside. They always break before she does. She sticks her hand through the letterbox, so I try to manoeuvre my body out of range. This means crouching down even further, so that my head is on my knees and I get a close-up view of the carpet. It's worse than I thought. There are grey clusters of dust gathered like storm clouds at the edges of the skirting board, and a pair of worn tights under the console table. She definitely can't come in. But my faint hope that she might get bored and settle for leaving a note is dashed when she screams,
"Honey, I know you're in there. You forgot to turn the telly off."
Oh, God. The da-da-da of the EastEnders theme tune booms from the living room, reinforcing my basic error. I feel like a character in a French farce, playing hide-and-seek with my best friend. Only I don't feel any urge to laugh. Crying seems the more appropriate response, but my biggest fear is that if I start, I will never stop.
"Come on, Tess," she shouts. "I'm not going anywhere, so you might as well open the door."
My legs are aching now. I might have had a chance of sitting, or rather crouching it out, before Christmas, when I was going to step classes 3 times a week and had thighs of steel. But then again, before Christmas, I had no need to avoid Mel or anyone else.